We will move on to the fourth case for this morning, Tadesse against Gonzalez, and we'll hear from Ms. Erickson.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Jennifer Erickson, and I'm here representing petitioner and appellant Ms. Ejigu Hagos Tadesse. Ms. Tadesse's appeal concerns key procedural errors that were made below in her proceedings before the immigration judge. As a result of these errors, Ms. Tadesse was denied a meaningful opportunity in which to present her own case or to rebut the government's case against her. These procedural errors had a significant potential to impact the outcome of the proceeding. Specifically, the errors related to two key pieces of evidence Ms. Tadesse was presenting, the first being the Ethiopian deportation order, and the second being the testimony of her therapist concerning Ms. Tadesse's post-traumatic stress disorder. Both the immigration judge below and the Board of Immigration of Appeals on appeal relied upon or were influenced by these procedural errors in their determinations concerning these two key pieces of evidence, and based upon that, largely came to their adverse credibility determination against Ms. Tadesse. Based on the adverse credibility determination, the Board of Immigration Appeals and below that the immigration judge denied Ms. Tadesse's applications for asylum, withholding of removal, and protections under the Convention Against Torture.
So as I understand it, you wanted to use Professor Levine not to discuss whether there was a wet seal on this order, but to discuss whether Ethiopia or lower-level Ethiopian police would have been using documents with such a seal as opposed to photocopies of documents at the time period in question?
That is correct. Neither side contests that this deportation order in question was a photocopied document. The main issue, we believe, is whether or not the Ethiopian government would have used a photocopied document in issuing a deportation order. And based on the affidavit, we know Dr. Levine would have certainly testified that, under the conditions within Ethiopia at that time, it was very likely that such methods would be used in issuing an order.
Now, one other thing that the immigration judge seems to be concerned about, as I recall, is how clear the evidence, or what was the evidence to show that Ms. Tadesse was Eritrean at all, that she would have been in the position of being persecuted by Ethiopia on that ground?
Certainly, and that ties directly into the deportation order. First and most importantly, we have Ms. Tadesse's testimony that her father is of Eritrean descent. But we also have this Ethiopian deportation order, and from reading the order, we come to an understanding that the Ethiopian government considered Ms. Tadesse to be of Eritrean descent, and on the basis of that, they both detained and deported her. So that order in and of itself is a very important corroborating testimony. There was also a letter presented below that I believe the immigration judge did not give weight to, but that would have also corroborated Ms. Tadesse's Eritrean heritage.
But it seems to me that your whole case actually does depend on whether you can rehabilitate somehow this deportation order.
Mm-hmm. We certainly think this was a critical piece of evidence in the case below. Certainly the Board of Immigration of the BIA described it as the primary piece of evidence in the case. The IJ also gave it significant weight. And for those reasons, we really believe that these procedural errors had a direct impact on the outcome of the proceeding.
Let me ask you this. Didn't she know that, or her counsel know that some analysis of the deportation order was coming, given the government's position in earlier hearings?
That is correct. There was the earlier proceeding in which the government expressed a desire mm-hmm. to examine the deportation order. However, the government failed to provide Ms. Tadesse's counsel below either a copy of the forensic document examiner's report, which would have given her an idea of the analysis or conclusions contained therein. And this was despite the fact that the government possessed that report for a full 6 months prior to the hearing, and despite local rules requiring them to provide that at least 10 days in advance of the hearing.
Why does that make any difference, given the fact that the IJ then gave you an extension mm-hmm. of time to go find your own expert?
Well, certainly,
it was late, I understand that, but you got time.
I certainly think it was prejudicial in that it directly impacted Ms. Tadesse's counsel's ability to cross-examine the witness against her, and that's a specific protection guaranteed under 8 U.S.C. 1229A.
Was there any opportunity, or was any opportunity sought to recall Ms. Held, the document examiner, after mm-hmm. Dr. Levine had had a chance to look at everything?
No. The extension had been granted solely for the purpose of calling Dr. Levine, and there's multiple references in the record below that talk about this.
Well, had there been a request by counsel at the time this additional time was given to respond, was there a request made to recall the witness?
No, there was not a request made to recall the witness at that time.
But in a sense, I mean, it strikes me that you weren't really prejudiced by that because the cross-examination that did occur of Ms. Held, I think, showed exactly what she was saying, namely that this was not a document with a wet seal, and some kinds of documents certainly have that, and also what she wasn't saying. She concedes that she doesn't have any particular knowledge about the Ethiopian government's deportation practices or the like.
I would certainly agree that the cross-examination before the immigration judge was effective given the circumstances. However, if Ms. Tedessa had had the requisite 10 days in which to prepare, she certainly could have counseled with Dr. Levine ahead of time. She could have brought specific documents with which to impeach and elicit admissions, further admissions from the forensic document examiner. I think in some instances it's difficult to prove prejudice. I don't believe this case is one of those, but even if it were, I think that's the precise reason for the bright line rule, the bright line 10-day rule requiring advance notice on these types of things. But I certainly believe that more could have been done with that cross-examination had the requisite notice been given. Mm-hmm. I'd like to speak briefly about the IJ's decision to preclude the testimony of Dr. Levine. As we know from Dr. Levine's affidavit, he was eminently qualified to provide testimony concerning this Ethiopian deportation order. He had studied Ethiopian society and culture for over 45 years. He had been recognized as an expert in this area by the United States Senate, by the Department of State, and by various international agencies. We know from his affidavit that he would have testified about conditions within Ethiopia, including the mass deportations of tens of thousands of Eritreans, the low level of literacy among Ethiopian government officials, and the general chaotic conditions. And based upon that, he would have been directly able to refute the conclusions set forth by the government's forensic document examiner. The decision to preclude his testimony, which was based solely on a determination that he was not a forensic document examiner or that he was not a forensic expert, was unmoored from the reality of the situation.
Did anybody ever try to tell the immigration judge that the purpose of using Dr. Levine was not for the forensics? You know, what kind of paper it was on, whether it was photocopied, whether it was not photocopied?
Yes. At the time that the third hearing in which Dr. Levine's testimony was proffered, there was certainly a discussion as to how Dr. Levine's conclusions would have been able to rebut the forensic document examiner's testimony, and you can find those. I don't have a specific record site for you, but I believe the record at 249 gives you a glimpse into the attempt to present this testimony and the appellant's counsel's description of what that testimony would entail.
And what about the social worker, the post-traumatic stress disorder testimony?
That's correct. This was an unusual occurrence within the proceedings. On the first day, Ms. Tedessa came prepared to present the live testimony of her social worker, Ms. Saul Buzaidi. And we know from the record at the time that the immigration judge was going to continue the proceedings, but discussed with counsel that she would like to go ahead and accept the therapist's affidavit in lieu of live testimony to alleviate some of the inconvenience associated with her coming back for a second day of hearings. At that time, the immigration judge assured the parties that by accepting the affidavit in lieu of live testimony, that she would be accepting the therapist as an expert and that she would be accepting the therapist's conclusions concerning post-traumatic stress disorder. The immigration judge further assured the parties that she would agree to allow them to present live testimony should an issue arise. However, the first my client heard of an issue arising was the immigration judge's decision denying asylum, denying withholding of removal, denying protection against convention against torture, in part because she claimed my client was unable to provide corroborating testimony to corroborate her testimony concerning her persecution. But as we know from the therapist, this is precisely what the therapist did present and could have elaborated on had she been permitted to testify live. This case is very similar in that respect to Boyanovsky. I believe this is a case that has been cited in my brief. But in that case, again, the immigration judge, based on time constraints, agreed to accept the affidavit of one of the petitioner's expert witnesses, agreed to accept it for the truth of the matter asserted, but then later discounted it entirely, claiming it was lost on this case because the affidavit simply assumed the truth of what the petitioner was saying. In this case, I think it's pretty similar. The immigration judge's decision to deny any weight to this affidavit was based on her conclusions that
Well, it seems to me that in some ways this social worker testimony really focuses on a fairly narrow point, namely that she had been through a very severe trauma and thus had this condition, PTSD, and that the immigration judge somehow had a greater expectation of Ms. Buzaiti that she'd be able to discuss at length, you know, conditions in Ethiopia and all sorts of other things that she would only have known secondhand.
That is correct. The immigration judge, in her analysis of Ms. Buzaiti's affidavit, focuses heavily on country conditions in Ethiopia, which, while Ms. Buzaiti was eminently qualified to testify on the presence or absence of post-traumatic stress disorder and other associated medical conditions, we would certainly contend that whether or not she was able or even provided an opportunity to testify about country conditions in Ethiopia certainly does not change or undercut her opinions on post-traumatic stress disorder in any way whatsoever. Mm-hmm. This would have been key corroborating evidence for Ms. Tedessa had it been given any weight whatsoever.
Well, if you would like to reserve rebuttal time, that's certainly available to you, unless you have something else you want to tell us right now.
No, I believe that covers it. I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Ms. Niemann-Kelting?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Melissa Niemann-Kelting, and I represent the Attorney General of the United States. Petitioner would have the court believe that her due process rights have been violated based on her claim that she was deprived of a reasonable opportunity to present her claim.
But, you know, in this case, unlike many that we see, I think she was careful to cite the various regulations and statutes that give her the right to a meaningful hearing. So I would say she did a pretty good job of allowing us to take this a step at a time. I think the Attorney General's taken the position frequently that whatever the due process clause is more than met by what the regulations themselves provide for.
Your Honor is correct. This Court has made it very clear that they will not go to the Constitution where they can look to the statute and the regulations first.
And that argument has been made.
Yes, the government's not contending that Ms. Tedessi did not appropriately set forth her claim in this matter. However, her claim fails to take into account the fact that she has had three opportunities to present her claim before the agency.
But, you know, the problem that I had with the immigration judge's opinion is I really got the sense of ships passing in the night. The immigration judge is saying that Dr. Levine couldn't testify because he wasn't a forensic expert, and Dr. Levine kept saying, I'm not challenging a single sentence of the forensic expert's conclusions about wet seals on or off the documents, and that by the same token, the forensic expert, Ms. Held, says, I'm not talking about country conditions in Ethiopia or Eritrea or anywhere else. I'm just saying these are the characteristics of this document. So as I see Dr. Levine's proffer, it really had to do with kind of the so what question. You know, what now follows from the fact that this was a photocopy? Should we assume that it is not the sort of thing the Ethiopians would use in this circumstance, or should we give some credence to the idea that maybe in these circumstances it is the kind of thing? So it's a very non-responsive comment on the immigration judge's part.
I appreciate Your Honor's concern on that point. I think it's important to note that when when the immigration judge gave Ms. Tedeschi her continuance at the end, she did say, I believe at page 243 of the record, that she did not want evidence of additional country conditions. She wanted any rebuttal evidence of the forensics of the deportation order itself.
But this in a sense, this is rebuttal evidence, because the whole point of the government's introducing the forensic evidence was to attempt to prove a fact in contention, namely whether this was a legitimate document or whether it was fraudulent. The rebuttal testimony from Dr. Levine went directly to that question. You didn't care otherwise how many seals were on the document or something. You were trying to prove, is this a for real deportation order or is it not?
Well, and going back to what you had asked opposing counsel, as far as was anyone making the immigration judge aware that this was the nature of Dr. Levine's testimony, there was a discussion and exchange at page 249 to 251 of the record, and the IJ explicitly states that she understands that Dr. Levine would testify to the fact that country conditions in Ethiopia were chaotic.
Well, but, and more than that, that this is the kind of document they would use.
Mm-hmm. But that is also undercut by the fact that if you look at the affidavit, which was not admitted as evidence, but was admitted for identification, at paragraphs five and six, he does not explicitly counter any of the State Department reports that explicitly state that Ethiopia has not deported Eritreans. And at page 260 of the record, the country conditions go so far as to state that they're not discriminating against Eritreans or Ethiopians of Eritrean origin, which is what Ms. Tedeschi purports to be, while there is nothing in the record to support that claim.
Well, so unless, of course, you accept her testimony and unless you can get over this deportation order, because the deportation order kind of says, first we thought you were Ethiopian and now we realize you're Eritrean. I'm not sure that the country condition is quite as absolute as you're saying. I think the volume of deportations of Eritreans, it reports, dropped considerably, but I thought it indicated there were still some occasional problems.
Well, according to, Your Honor, the 2004 country reports, which are the most recent that we have in the record, it says that at 282, it says that Eritreans and Ethiopians of Eritrean origin have had their status regularized by the government. And also on that page, it says that there are no reports of forced exile. And at 290, it says that there are no official reports of discrimination against Eritreans. But I think getting back to the other bases for the immigration judge's decision here, they do all fit together in that the immigration judge was troubled by the fact that there was a fraudulent document that was found to be not valid.
Well, if it was,
assuming for the purposes of this argument that it was compounded by the fact that the immigration judge explicitly states in her opinion at page 131 of the record that she didn't know what to believe as far as initially Ms. Tedeschi was saying in her application and her declaration, I was sent this deportation order after my release from detention, and I was ordered expelled from the country. It was delivered to me. And then she changes her story in her testimony and says, no, I got it on the day that I was released. They handed it to me. And the immigration judge...
differences, you know, if you're told you have to get out, and then, of course, she violates the order in a sense. She's traumatized from the rapes. So she recovers for a little while before she leaves, but
I think there are two ways of looking at that, Your Honor, and again, that is what an IJ is permitted to do in light of all the evidence. A reasonable fact finder is able to come to a conclusion, and the lens this court must look through is not whether it would have, based on these facts, come to a different conclusion, but whether or not Ms. Tedeschi has shown that this evidence on this record compels the conclusion that she was credible.
Right, here, if that's true, as long as the record itself is appropriately put together.
That's
which
right.
Which is why we, again, have to get back to this deportation order.
But, I think that's right, but the immigration judge was very careful in her decision in going through and saying that she did not know what to believe based on the differences in the story. Not only that, but while she does concede that some of the findings were minor as far as the education, whether or not she finished school or not, she concedes that that's a minor difference between her excuse me, her application and her testimony, but also the omission of her marriage, that her her application says that she went home for vacation, and then when she testifies before the court, she says, oh, I actually went home to get married, and then there's no more discussion of her husband.
Consistent? I mean, it seems to me those could be entirely consistent with each other.
But based on this record and
time, take a vacation, and you know, and that's the time that they've scheduled, you know, a wedding, for example.
But the immigration judge was the fact finder in this case, and she heard the testimony, and she found on this record that Ms. Tedeschi did not show that she was a credible witness, based not only on.
But if she's saying you're not credible based on things that are entirely reconcilable, how is that a rational conclusion?
But in her view, as the fact finder in this case, they were not reconcilable. She stated that she did not know what to believe as far as how Ms. Tedeschi came across or came into possession of this deportation order, whether or not it's fraudulent, both the IJ and the board finding that it is a fraudulent document, and that there's nothing else on the record to support the fact that Ms. Tedeschi is, in fact, of Eritrean origin.
But getting back to these the document, though, one of the things that the IJ relied on and saying it was fraudulent was looking at the 2000 country report and saying that Ethiopia had stopped deporting ethnic Eritreans at that time. But the reports were talking about mass deportations, right?
The reports do refer generally to mass deportations.
So is it inconceivable that the Ethiopian government would refuse to admit an ethnic Eritrean several months after it stopped the mass deportations, particularly when it was in June, it was a ceasefire, and the final peace didn't occur until December?
That's correct, Your Honor, but one other aspect that goes to the immigration judge's finding in this case was the fact that she was able to renew her passport after June, in I believe August of 2000. So if this government allegedly had some list with her family's name on it showing that she was of Eritrean origin, why would it renew her passport to enable her to come back into the country if it was just going to turn around and issue this possibly valid, possibly not valid deportation order that it was never actually enforced? Because by her own testimony, she admits that she was able to remain in the country unharmed for 2 months. No one was following up to see if she had left. No one was hunting her down. She does not state that she was in hiding during this time. She says that she was recovering from her trauma, but she was able to stay in the country for 2 months without any further incident and then decided to go leave
well,
that and
go to
Italy.
Then she flees to Italy. I mean, you know, look, one office issues the passports, you know, and another, you know, then it's the local police, basically, who take her into the cell and rape her. So I'm not sure that those are inconsistent
And then just the other thing, too, and I'm still concerned about this document examiner because, I mean, is it your position that the document examiner was qualified to testify that the photocopied documents are never used by governments, even in a war zone? Even when it's a time of mass deportation?
Your Honor's question goes to the document Dorothy Held's testimony, and
right.
She did say on the record that she was not qualified to testify to issuance policies,
precisely.
But that documents from
Region 14.
Region, thank you, Your Honor. Region 14, while she did not have
any deportation
right.
order. She had
not
birth certificates.
But we don't know exactly what other documents she had from Region 14, but she did have other documents from Region 14.
But a birth certificate, yeah.
Yeah, the birth certificate is not, it's the deportation order that's critical here, not birth certificate.
I understand that, Your Honor, but she was not claiming to be an expert on the issuance policies. But in that same vein, Dr. Levine is not an expert on the issuance policies. If you look at paragraphs 5 and 6, which are the pertinent paragraphs of his affidavit, he merely comes to the conclusion that it's plausible, but he doesn't give any indication that, A, Ethiopia was still enforcing deportation of Eritreans during this time, or, B, that this was something. No, there's nothing in this record that shows that even during times of mass deportation, that they were using photocopied deportation orders. So the immigration judge was well within her discretion to find that she was not convinced based on this deportation order that had did not have a wet seal on it, the inconsistency between Ms. Tedeschi's application of how she came across it versus her testimony of how she came across it, the implausibility of her passport, the fact that she didn't seek asylum in Italy based on a vague assertion that everyone there was against her once she returned, yet remained there for 15 months. I think when the court takes all of the IJ's factors into consideration, you cannot find that a reasonable fact finder must conclude that Ms. Tedeschi was credible and has met her burden of proof.
Well, back to this examiner. She doesn't speak Amharic, does she?
Pardon?
She doesn't speak the language.
That's not, I believe not.
Because
it's not
in her CV.
No.
Right.
No. But that was not a basis here. And if the court's concern is about the Pasha, which petitioner does cite in her opening brief, that is distinguishable in that the sole basis for the denial of the asylum application in that case was the fact that the IJ found the document was fraudulent, and that was the sole reason. And the court took issue with that because there the examiner did testify outside of his experience, saying that Albania couldn't have used a color copier because they couldn't afford it, and that it couldn't have been a valid document because the printed text in Albanian did not contain the accent marks. And there, the fault was that he was testifying to things outside of his knowledge, whereas here, we have an examiner who did not try to go outside the bounds of her qualifications. Moreover, there was no objection at the time of the immigration hearing to the qualifications, and understanding that she did not have time to go over things.
Right.
But she was given a continuance, and as you pointed out during my opposing counsel's presentation, there was no request to recall examiner held. After she had an additional time to think of anything else she might have wanted to cross-examine her on. The cross-examination in this case was sufficient. She was given a reasonable opportunity.
I want you to talk about this post-traumatic stress disorder, though.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because I don't understand the IJ's determination there when the psychologist's affidavit specifically and repeatedly says that what caused it was the rapes and the trauma.
Here, I think, and to address also a concern that was raised earlier.
And the fact that, as counsel said, you know, they didn't know till they got the decision that there was going to be any concern with that. It was their understanding that the IJ was going to accept that.
Correct. And I don't think that she disregarded the affidavit for what it said. As you pointed out, the affidavit was very narrow in that it talked about a severe trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder. The IJ, I don't think, in this case had any sort of greater expectation that the therapist talk about country conditions. I think the point that...
No. That's what the record shows. The IJ is very critical of the social worker for not discussing country conditions, for not... You know, for saying the affidavit's conclusion that Tedeschi was expelled contradicts Tedeschi's testimony that the failure to seek therapy was, you know, until later was some point against her. There's all sorts of stuff.
I think the point that IJ was trying to make there, to be clear, was not that this therapist should have been able to testify to that. She accepted that she was an expert in post-traumatic stress disorder. She accepted that there were events in Ms. Tedeschi's life that caused these symptoms. I think the immigration judge's point here was that the information contained in the therapist's affidavit, which was taken directly from Ms. Tedeschi, was undermined by the country condition showing that Ethiopia is not deporting Eritreans, and that even taken in its face, it was not sufficient to rehabilitate Ms. Tedeschi's credibility issues.
She's using it as country condition. She's using it for a purpose that Ms. Bizzetti never proffered it for.
Mm-hmm. I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I think she's...
12 of the order and
134
the
of the record.
13. Well, I'm looking at the...
Oh, you have it in the appendix. Yes, page 12.
To the... petitioner's brief, and there's just all sorts of stuff that she's not really trying to talk about.
Well, again, Your Honor, I respectfully...
Well, particularly when you look at language when the IJ accepts Buzzati's conclusion that she suffers from post-traumatic stress, but says that these symptoms do not establish that the events described in her testimony and her affidavit are the events which cause these symptoms. And in her findings, she says, she talks about the flashbacks associated with the events that occurred during her detention and rapes. She talks about the extremely depressed mood and self-blame and shame that are characteristics of survivors of rape. These are quotes directly out of Vuzzati's conclusions about
it. That's correct, Your Honor. I think the important thing is to also look at the last sentence, is that even taking all of that, this is me, not the IJ, taking all of that into consideration, the IJ then says that the affidavit fails to serve as corroborative evidence that respondent was persecuted on account of any alleged nationality or ethnicity. So she's not saying that something didn't happen to Ms. Tedeschi to cause these things, but she's saying, taken in light of the fact that there is no evidence that Ms. Tedeschi's Eritrean, which would be the on account of prong, that it's not sufficient to rehabilitate the IJ's reasoned finding that she was not a credible witness. I see my time has expired, but I would like to note quickly in conclusion that the government's position is that there was an alternative merits finding in this case, that even assuming credibility and assuming past persecution, that the presumption of a well-founded fear has been rebutted by the country condition evidence. In the petitioner's reply brief, she asserts that she did not, in fact, waive this argument, which was our position, but that the board did not adopt it, therefore it was not before the court. And in closing, because this is an E5 decision where the board is allowed to supplement and add its own reasons, and the board in this case did not go another way in affirming the immigration judge decision, in that it didn't say, even if credible, you didn't meet your burden.
Could you go back? Final.
Yes.
And we're just finishing up, but my request to you is to go back to the board and tell them to be clear when they're supplementing, what they're supplementing. Mm-hmm. It's really a guessing game for us every single time. Sometimes it's a sentence, sometimes it's a paragraph, sometimes it's three pages, sometimes it's parts, sometimes it's all. The board could do itself a favor by making this a little more clear.
I appreciate that.
And then on this alternative argument, in terms of, because there's no, the most recent country report you talk about is this 2004, but you would agree, wouldn't you, that matters in Ethiopia have again taken a turn for the worse, because now Ethiopia has declared war on Somalia and Eritrea might be playing some role in that?
Well, that would, if that's new evidence that's come into effect, that would be outside of the record. And the IJ specifically says that where does she say that conditions in Ethiopia are far from ideal, but that it's Ms. Tedeschi's burden to show that she would be persecuted on account of a protected ground, and that the country conditions don't show that. So, but I appreciate Your Honor's time. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks very much. And Ms. Erickson, we'll give you an extra minute or two since we definitely ran over on this one.
Assuming you want to take it.
If you don't need them, we don't insist.
Hopefully I won't. I'd like to address two points that the government raised in their argument and then make some brief concluding remarks. The first point that I'd like to address is the government's waiver argument, which I believe you had just gotten warmed up on some questions there. Certainly it is our position that this alternate holding by the IJ was not adopted by the Board of Immigration Appeals, and we can tell that by the language that the Board of Immigration Appeals used in their decision. They discussed specifically the petitioner's burden of showing a well-founded fear of persecution, and we know if they were instead adopting the alternate holding, they would have certainly addressed the government's burden of demonstrating a fundamental change in country conditions. And this language appears nowhere in the decision, and thus we believe that we certainly were under no obligation to present it. But we did, in fact, even though this was not raised as an independent legal issue, you can see throughout the brief there's references made to the continuing problems in Ethiopia related to human rights abuses against people of Eritrean descent. So this, I believe, is covered doubly. Not only were we not under an obligation to raise it, but we certainly did address it substantively within the brief. The second point that I'd like to go to is the discussion of country conditions within Ethiopia, and specifically the State Department country reports. The Seventh Circuit has repeatedly held that State Department country condition reports cannot be used to rebut specific testimony offered by an applicant for asylum in the United States. The most recent case on that is Bachi versus Ashcroft. I think the reasons for that are more than clear. State Department reports take, you know, the 20,000-foot view looking down on a situation. They certainly can't speak to every individual's situation within that country. Here, Ms. Tedeschi is offering specific testimony, key pieces of documents and evidence that support her story of persecution. As a result, I don't believe that general information in the country reports would be sufficient to overcome her testimony. Finally, I'd just like to say that based on Ms. Tedesse's account of her persecution, she fits squarely within the protections guaranteed under asylum. She has demonstrated that she's a refugee, that she is unable or unwilling to return to Ethiopia because of a well-founded fear of persecution on account of her Eritrean heritage. And as a result of that, I would urge this court to vacate and remand this case for further proceedings consistent with the relevant statutory protections. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.